Pros, just because something on the job runs out doesn't mean you have to. Order it on the Lowe's app. My Lowe's Pro Rewards members get free same-day delivery on eligible orders over $25. Get the fasteners, hardware, or tools you need to keep the job moving. Order by 2 p.m. and get eligible in-stock items delivered right to your job site by 8 p.m. Members get more at Lowe's. Loyalty program subject to terms and conditions. Subject to availability. Restrictions and terms at Lowe's.com/shipping terms. Subject to change.
Welcome to part two of our interview with Christy Summer of Soul Sisters Paranormal as we discuss the Ma Barker House, where you have something like this, where it did sound like a residual energy of them speaking about get ready. But then you have almost a conscious element of it as well, when you're using the spirit box and you're getting answers to the questions where Blackburn is coming out. Tell me, and this is just an opinion-based question, what do you think is going on there? Is this just a residual haunting where there is the energy somehow replaying itself and we've yet to understand why our world reproduces things this way? Or are there spirits there simultaneously in a conscious form still inhabiting this house where they perished?
That's a great question, and I do get that question a lot. I do think it's both. I think there's residual, because remember, I mean, you're two people locked in a house. You're awoken by FBI agents surrounding the house. There's a lot of emotion going on at this time. You've got guns in your hands. You're returning fire, and so those emotions, I think, are imprinted in time in that house. And so I do think that what we caught at that moment with the get ready, I think that's residual. And I do think there's some residual footsteps as you hear the running back and forth that people have claimed to hear. I do think that's residual. On the other side, I do think, I personally feel that there is intelligence in the house. And the reason I say that is because Ma and Fred, they never had a home base. They never had a home. They were crisscrossing the country for years, and they would go to different hideouts, but they never had a permanent address. And so when they go to Oklawaha and they go to this house, it was just another stomp on, you know, this journey, if you will, of going from hideout to hideout to hideout. So when they're killed in this location, I mean, what better location to stay at? I mean, it was until they got killed, I mean, it was all intents and purposes someplace that they enjoyed being. You know, they would go out on the town, they would sit on the dock, they would go out fishing. And so in my mind, if you're going to stay in a location, why not stay in that house? Because you've got no other place, you had no other home place while you were alive that you called home. So in my mind, that's why I think they stay. I do, like I said, I think it's both. I think there's residual and intelligence.
Again, another opinion-based question, and you did kind of answer some of this. It was going to be, you know, why do you think they would still want to stay in this home, considering they did move around so much, evading the law? But that does make a lot of sense of maybe they did find some peace at this residence, and they did like the community, and they did try to assimilate to a certain extent before they went out onto their next venture, which obviously never happened. But maybe it's just that, is that they found some peace at this residence. When you are in there investigating, what are some of the other pieces of evidence that you found that either point to the residence being haunted by the Barkers, which obviously there's a lot of that, but the house, more than 80 years of history there. Is there anyone else residing in a spiritual way within the walls of the home?
Honestly, I don't think so. Personally, again, it's an opinion. I do not believe that there is. Mm-hmm. You know, back to the spirit box, when we were upstairs in the what we refer to as the kill room, we were upstairs in the kill room. Again, there's no power in the house. And we had the spirit box out, and we always make sure that we're a good 6-7 feet back from any type of electronic equipment, just to make sure that, you know, we can verify that nothing that we have on our person is going to set this off. Our cell phones are always on airplane mode. So we can say with certainty that we are not causing any of this interference. But we set the spirit box down in the room, and we backed off of it. And we had a male voice come through saying, someone's up here. And again, if your audience isn't familiar with what the Spirit Box does, it's an AM/FM radio that has been designed to what we call sweep through frequencies. So you'll get, when you turn it on and you start sweeping, you'll get the through the AM/FM frequencies. So if you were to pick up any terrestrial radio stations, if you will, you would expect to hear something like those type of words. You would not expect it to hear a phrase because it's spinning through so fast. Any phrase such as "someone's up here," you shouldn't get that. It's between the bands, if you will. And that's what we picked up. We picked up "someone's up here." And so right after that, another voice came in and said that was Kate. Again, Ma's original name was Arizona Donnie Kate Clark. She hated the name Arizona. She went by Kate, but her gang members called her Ma. So we got another phrase saying that was Kate. And when we asked who was up here, we got another phrase that said, "We the ones dead." And we said, "What did the FBI do to you?" And we got the phrase, "They murdered us." So again, in my mind, these are things, these are phrases that, one, shouldn't be occurring because of the sweep rate, and two, are very germane to that location. So again, in my mind, that is very conscious, if you will. And that's something that we, again, to us is very compelling.
Yeah, I mean, it's extremely compelling to get phrases like that. A lot of folks will sometimes dismiss devices of that nature, and I'm completely open-minded on them. I think almost anything can be used to communicate. And I do believe there's plenty of times where, you know, there's randomness that sometimes happens and it looks, you know, more suspicious than it really is. But when you get down to, you know, the frequency at which you're getting the answers, there's only so many coincidences that can happen back to back, you know, in one location.
You're absolutely right. And then what we also try to do is we try to validate that. Mm-hmm. So again, if you're not convinced of just a Spirit Box, okay, so we take the Spirit Box away, and now we've got a REM pod. Mm-hmm. Again, no electricity in here. So if you've got a device that only that it goes off when it's manipulated by energy, and there's no energy in the house, and it starts going off or alarming when we're asking certain questions, you know, to me, that validates the Spirit Box. That validates kind of what we're feeling and what we're seeing at the time. Sure. So, you know, we never take one piece of evidence as the end all be all. You know, to us, when you put this all together, it comes up with a story that to me is unexplainable. Because there's no experts in this field, I can't claim something as absolute paranormal. But what I will say is it's unexplainable. We've gone through and we've looked at the evidence, we've put it together, and to us, these are things that I just absolutely cannot explain.
Sure. It sounds as if getting, you know, answers from the dead is sometimes in this home as simple as asking the questions. But is there anything that seems to bring these spirits of the Barkers out of the shadows? Is there any bait, if you will? Is there anything that seems to make them want to appear more than they would otherwise?
Well, that's a great question. And what we typically do is when we go into an investigation, whether at the Ma Barker house or any other location, is we really try to delve into the research. And so with this, we delved into the gang and, you know, we looked at what type of ammunition they would use, what type of, alcohol they would drink and stuff. So we did. We had trigger items. We put a $100 bill down. We put a couple of bullets down. I poured a glass of whiskey and we left some water and a cigar. And I'm not sure if those triggered something or if one or all of them triggered something. But to us, you know, we go in and we don't try to provoke. We never try to provoke. What we do is our first initial conversation, if you will, to whatever entity is in any of the locations that we go to, is that we're here to tell your story. We want to know the truth. We want to know from your point of view what happened. What's your story? And I think that the Barkers really wanted to tell their story, because a lot of the controversy surrounding the shootout was that J. Edgar Hoover was so gung-ho to get the gang that he actually that that he concocted the fact that Ma was the leader of this gang, that she was ruthless, that she was a killer. But there's very little evidence that Ma actually committed crimes. Now, granted, she benefited from her boys. She knew that they were criminals, but she there's very little indication that she actually committed any of the crimes. So, you know, when they went in and the photographs of the bodies in the room actually show her holding a Tommy gun. Do I think she shot? Yes. Do I think she knew how to use a Tommy gun? I absolutely do. I don't know if she was as ruthless as J. Edgar Hoover kind of made her out to be, but I do think that she was a criminal. And when you look at all of that, you know, again, if you're trying to tell somebody's story and you get something over the spirit box that says they murdered us, you know, that to me is them telling us, hey, the FBI murdered us. That's how we're taking this. Mm-hmm. So, again, this entire investigation has been one of the most fascinating that my group has done, absolutely.
So my next question, again, you're really good at answering my questions right before I ask them. Okay. But that's good. It means our conversation is flowing in the right direction simultaneously. It was going to be really an opinion-based question here, but what do you think it is that the Barkers wanted to communicate from the other side? What is their message that they're trying to get out through investigators who are looking into them?
I do think it's the fact that, you know, their side would be that they murdered us. Now, let me just go back a little bit into the history, aside from the paranormal. I mentioned the fact that Alvin Karpis was one of these gang members. And the interesting thing is Alvin Karpis was actually taken alive by the FBI a few weeks after the shootout. And he became public enemy number, after the shootout, he became public enemy number one. And they tracked him down and they actually captured him alive. And they sentenced him to 25 years in Alcatraz. So he was in Alcatraz, and he was the longest serving prisoner in Alcatraz's history, but he was paroled. And and he died in 1979, a free man. He moved to Spain, and he died a free man. There is actually an interview with him that you can find on YouTube, and he basically flat out says, Ma knew we were criminals, but she had no involvement in our criminal enterprises. She wasn't a mastermind. All she wanted to do was listen to the country music radio station and work on jigsaw puzzles. She knew we were criminals, but she did nothing else. And so, again, now Alvin Karpis is a criminal as well, so you got to take what he says with a grain of salt. But if that's the truth, and you've got this woman who's murdered by, in her mind, murdered by the FBI, then I would say her message would be, I was murdered by the FBI. Yeah. You know, my son was murdered by the FBI. You know, she was very devoted to her son. She would do anything for them. And I think maybe that's the message that she wants to get across. Just to say, yeah, we're still here. And our side of the story is, you know, we were done down.
Yeah. Have you done any investigating on the land? Have you been able to? Obviously, somebody else bought it, but I'd be curious to know if the land holds anything there.
Honestly, I have not. I have not been given permission to do that. The new owners really don't want anything to do with that.
Sure.
A few years ago, before the house was moved, a group did go in. They were given permission to go in with metal detectors, and they found some really cool stuff, artifacts, bullets. A ring was found, you know, a couple pieces of guns were found, and it's actually fascinating. And they're going to start displaying some of that, in the museum and in the interpretive center that they're going to build at the new location. So I find all of that stuff fascinating, but to answer your question, no, I have not investigated the land itself.
I mean, it's understandable at that point in time where, you know, essentially the FBI wanted a big kill. They wanted a big look, we're doing good. This is a good organization. This is working. So they're going to. And yes, they were criminals. It's not to play that down that they were not. But I'm sure it was also played up probably beyond, you know, the levels of what reality may have been for their own purposes of public, you know, view of the FBI at that moment in time.
Absolutely, because J. Edgar Hoover, he needed some legitimacy, as you said. He and his group You know, they concocted the public enemy list. You know, gang members were on the public enemy list. And again, to bring that heightened awareness to, we're coming in and we're cleaning up this criminal activity, organized crime as well as gangs. And we're going to be that federal law enforcement agency that's going to get done what the state can't get done. And so they needed, like you said, they needed that big kill. They needed that recognition in order to say, we're legitimate. We are a force now, and you better not mess with us. So it was, you know, it was a perfect, I mean, all of this was in a culmination of a lot of social structure and a lot of social angst that were going on at the time. And it greatly benefited J. Edgar Hoover and the legitimacy of the FBI. Absolutely.
Mm-hmm. Really, them feeling unjust, like, yes, you know, we were this, but we weren't that. We weren't what we were made out to be. And wanting to have that story told, the seeking justice is a very, very strong emotion when that is how you operate. Very interesting.
Absolutely.
What I think in our closing question is really the house now being moved, being worked on with a bright future ahead of it for historical purposes, and weird thing to say about such a house, but a future of people understanding history. It's obviously a very important piece of history of that area. So it's awesome that it's being restored and being held on to and not just knocked down. What do you see for the future of the house? Obviously, in terms of educating people about the past, but also as we're seeing in the last 10, 15 years, properties like this that are somewhat stigmatized and have a haunted history to them now, you know, being opened, you know, obviously for your group, you said, for your investigations. But do you see this being a place where others can learn as well in the world of paranormal as they go into the future with this property?
I believe so. And I'll just say that Marion County Park and Recs have done a great job of maintaining the integrity of the house. Like I said, they even down to the wall sconces, everything is meticulous. They studied the FBI crime scene photos. They studied photos from the Carson Bradford house, when it was the Carson Bradford house. And they meticulously have gone through and put things in the location where they would have been that day. They're very much going to push the educational part of it and how it was instrumental in Ocklawaha as well as Marion County, because like I said, you know, Marion County was where the bodies laid for 8 months before, you know, the estranged husband of Ma came back and collected them. So Ma and Fred are actually buried in Oklahoma, coincidentally in a pauper's prison, a pauper's cemetery, if you will. And so the preservation efforts to me are extraordinary. I feel a very close connection to this house. I've actually become a volunteer with the Park and Recreation Department just to kind of, you know, maintain that connection to the house. It's very personal to me. I enjoy going back into that. Eventually, they will start opening it up to paranormal investigators, but it will be on a selective basis at first, just because, as I said, right now to get to it, it's a little bit tedious. There's no electricity. There's no facilities. So, you know, it's one of those things that we will have to look on it as from a group by group basis with regard to paranormal investigators. And while they acknowledge that there could be paranormal activity based on our findings, it's not something that they're going to really market as the driving factor for the house. They really want it to be as a historical location for the community. Sure. So a lot of community involvement. They will start doing the reenactments again. I think they wanted to start doing that in 2021. And they're really going to do some cool things with regard to staging it, if you will, on what it looked like that day. So as I said before, it was surrounded by FBI agents. So they're going to have little markers. They know exactly where each of those agents were standing based on the FBI maps. So they're going to have little markers at the correct distance and location so you can see which agent was firing in what direction, which I think is pretty cool. So the historical significance of the house is really going to be played up, I think, more so than the paranormal aspect. And, you know, in my mind, I'm comfortable with that just because of how significant it is. In my mind, all of these locations, every place that we've gone, it's the history that really drives it. the paranormal, to us at least, is the secondary aspect.
Sure.
So I'm very happy with what they're doing, and you know, I hope to be involved in a lot of that historical recreation and such. But yeah, we're definitely going to be involved with it when they move forward with the paranormal.
That wraps up part two of our interview with Christy Summer of Soul Sisters Paranormal and the Ma Barker House. For more on Soul Sisters Paranormal, you can visit their website at soulsistersparanormal.com. Until next time for The Grave Talks, I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for listening.